Howdy there, folks, and welcome to the Black Pants Legion podcast. My guest today is one of the people who keeps trying to tell me I'm the voice of Battletech and really, really important, and I keep arguing with him, but he's everyone's favorite, most Canadian Battletech guru, and recently released an amazing video. What was the name of that video? Just so people know.
It's the Warhammer 2C video.
It's a masterpiece. I think it's your best work so far. Big Red, welcome on board.
Oh, thank you very much, Tex. Thank you very much.
So I have our first subject. It just occurred to me.
Uh-oh.
So we're both Battletech lore hounds. Sure. We both have read lots of Battletech lore. Yes. Both make videos on Battletech on YouTube.
Of course not.
Oh, no. But we have a lot of crossover.
Sure.
We've talked and made fun of a lot of the different points, and we're both historians as well. We both are actually, you know, students of history. We love studying history, and we see the crossover between that and Battletech. But you and I both have talked about a lot of different nascent points in Battletech. But the one thing that I'm going to open up with, and this is where everyone's just going to suddenly, like, pop up.
I can tell from your tone that this is going to be something atrocious.
No, it won't. Come on. So, all right. Canopus Catgirls.
Oh, God.
Listen.
Of course. Yeah.
So years ago on my stream, and I remember where this started. I'm not saying I started this thing in the community. I will refuse that till my dying day.
You, sir, are going to be renowned until your dying day for being responsible for that cursed meme.
No. Fuck off. So here's what happened. I was on a stream, and this is like right after, I think, the American Civil War, which really took off, and people really liked it. And I was streaming between part one and part two, and we were talking a little bit about it on stream, and I had this person who says, I'm really into anime, and, you know, I'm not sure if Battletech's for me, because the robots are different. I'm like, yeah, they're different. And they said, why should I get into Battletech? And I was like, well, you're a weeb, right? And they said, yeah. And I said, well, there's Catgirls. And I said that, and then I noticed after that point, so many people were just like, this guy who knows the lore says this exists, and it just became this thing in the community. Now, I did not start it, but I certainly waved a flag in front of that bull.
Hey, look over here, you guys. Look over here, 1990s artwork right here.
Right, so here's the thing. For those who are curious, are there Catgirls in Battletech? Yes and no.
So
yes and no. Go ahead.
I will give you the answer of yes in the context of that I am sure that there are people with advanced genetic manipulation or cybernetics who may identify themselves as Catgirls. But I will answer no in the context of there's flimsy evidence at best that they actually exist.
There's one photo, and the photo is of like a Canopus cat house.
She's an exotic dancer and a cyborg. Right. She's literally, you know.
So that's what I'm saying is in this scene, in this one photo, there's a lady who has the cybernetic parts to make her look like a cat. That's not the most interesting thing in that photo. The most interesting thing in that photo is, yeah, there's a mermaid bit also just hanging there ready to go. I mean, imagine being that pit stop guy. Like, all right, cat girl's coming in. Boom, boom, boom. Sitting there with an impact wrench. But it's a mech tech making extra money. But the thing that really blows my mind is it says, wait a second. Even exotic dancers have access in this place to that level of cybernetics. That's a lot more telling to me than the catgirl thing. But people focus on what they will.
Cybernetics are pretty prolific throughout Battletech, at least in the Inner Sphere, with the exception of the Free Worlds League. The Free Worlds League be like, nah, unless you're a creepy Blakist cultist until, like, the end of the Blakist era, you know, which has the other name. I've trained myself to say Blakist era because YouTube has an interesting perception of that word.
What? Well, Jihan? That's crazy. Jihan? But no, the audience can't see it, but I'm pointing up. So the thing is that it's an interesting notion, and it shows a lot more depth that, like, cybernetics are that pervasive in the universe, but people just glommed onto the catgirl thing, you know,
because
internet.
Well, I had the misfortune of having something similar happen, and it has not blown up as big, but When you explain the family but not family structure. So I had a guy show up in a live stream. This is like early on.
Sure.
Who was like.
And your live streams are excellent. For anyone out there listening, please go yell at Red on the live stream because he'll answer any question. You can go there and be like, Professor Red, why is it this guy looks dumb? And you'll sit there and be like, well, it was the 90s and they didn't have a lot of money. And, you know, you'll answer everybody who comes in. Yeah, like earnestly and honestly.
So here's the tragedy, of course, because in the late 80s and early 90s, they were being as edgy as possible.
Oh, yeah.
But this one guy.
I mean, there was a fucking merc unit called Greenhaven Gestapo.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was also, for anyone who's curious, and I'm sorry for running over you, but for anyone who's curious, the 90s was an edgy era of games. World of Darkness set that tone. It was like, be counterculture, be dark, be edgy. That's how shit was.
So, now that the tire treads are firmly set over my body. No,
oh, shut no, up.
But the thing is he was a Klan fan. And like,
oh, yeah.
People say I'm not a Klan fan. My biggest videos, my three biggest videos that are over 3 hours long, all Klan videos. And they're not like me just taking a big turd on them.
No, but, you raise realistic points. Like, this is a logistics nightmare. Or they knew better and acted anyways. These are points that I've also made and get hate for. So I get it.
So but what, like, I love the clans, not as much as the houses, but I do love them. But he comes in and he goes, because I put out a video and this was just like one of the first clan videos I'd covered or something like that. And he's just like, you know, you're such a house fan, but the Inner Sphere is led by all these inbred nobles. And I was like,
oh inbreeding.
He who is within the glass house, my friend, should
pot,
not cast stones.
And pot, he's like, what kettle, you? Black.
Like, he's like, what do you mean? And I'm not going to get too into the details, but needless to say, they might not have had a mother, but they are brothers and sisters, and they love each other
in
very much.
In the South, in the South, we call this phenomenon an Uncle Dad.
Like, or my, if you read Thurston's third Jade Phoenix trilogy, the
really,
third in it.
Really great book series. Really great.
But what's amazing is when Diana first meets Aiden Pride, it is one of the most uncomfortable passages in the history of Battletech because she's like, wow, he looks like Mom. And you're like, oh no.
I hear banjos. Yeah. Like, the thing is that I was on the Bungletech podcast, and they're good people. Shout out to Bungletech, and they had me awesome on there. And they said, oh, just super positive, super positive. And the thing that fucking blew my mind was, you know, they were like, Tex, you trash the clans a lot. And I'm like, yes, I don't think the eugenics program warrior cult that determines your caste from birth are the good guys. I don't think those are good guys. Now, I'm not saying Battletech has good guys. The arguably the good guys in Battletech are the people who are more or less saying, please go away and let me just live in peace. Which is, individuals can be good. The houses and
Hold on.
What?
I don't know if you've heard this, but have you heard that there was a man on Terra who was doing his best to save mankind, and he was actually divinely inspired.
Oh.
His name is Jerome Blake, and right. I have a lot to tell you about Jerome.
In the Black Pants Legion, there are people who do the Blake posting because there's an unfortunate image of Jerome Blake that. The guys in the Black Pants Legion put pit vipers, those sunglasses on them. They Blake post.
Oh no.
They're like, they'll say Blake's peace be with you, or you know, praise Blake. But no, I
say praise Blake all the time.
I think that it was one of the mistakes made in the lore was when they really got rid of the bogeyman. Because Comstar makes such a great bogeyman. Because it's the guy in the walls who reads all your mail and can appear at exactly the right time to push exactly the right dominoes and be like, just as planned, you know, and be freaky with that. That was always good.
I've been openly critical about it, their removal. And there's, and like, I'm like, you know, I have a business background, sure, you know, in terms of sales and marketing and stuff
like
that.
I'm shit with money.
No, and that's okay. But like, but what I mean is there are a huge number of ComGuard players. At one point, they were the most popular faction.
Oh,
in
yeah.
The setting.
No, I've met so many ComStar people who are diehard, and they're like, They were like, the universe ended in 3067.
Yeah, like, because, and it's not because of the Blakist era. It's because after that, you basically go through the process of killing off ComStar. And once they're dead, like, I hate to say it, they're the third rung of the setting. So you had the Inner Sphere, you had the clans, and you had the ComStar faction.
Right.
So ComStar and
exactly.
the Word of Blake.
They're, with they them were the gone, balance. It, they yeah, were the total like, scales of the setting.
Yeah, and like with them gone, you not only abandon a large number of players, which I think is just, it's just bad. Like, just to be blunt, it's just not good business.
Oh,
like,
you know, like, I'm sorry. The number one. All right, let's play a game. Right, let's play a what if. You're the CEO of an ice cream company, right?
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Let me give you a briefing. All right, just for people who aren't grasping this. All right, your number one flavor that is selling is chocolate. It's doing okay. very well. It's doing very
yeah,
well.
Yeah, we're going to get rid of chocolate. I think that should be gone.
Well, I mean, it is
it's going to go.
Okay, understood. So that is that is basically what happened.
It's like, okay, like,
are we going to replace it with double chocolate? Are we going to replace it with something more exotic? No.
Well, no, they are trying to replace, like, I mean, let's be real. I'm just, like, this is just firing from the hip. They're trying to replace
sure.
it with
Seafox. Of course. I mean, we're doing hyperbole.
They're trying to replace it with Seafox. And the problem is Seafox is a clan. And that's not meaning
right.
that, like...
No. I get what you're saying. You need the third wheel. You need something that is not in the sphere of clans and not in the sphere of the great houses.
Yeah, and so because Seafox is never going to fill that void. And it's not going to culturally fill that void with the player base. It's also, to be quite frank, not unique enough. Being like,
no,
we're planners.
I agree.
We planners who love money. It's like, okay, like
neat, but it's one of those things when it comes down to factions and games. Everyone has their favorite. Everyone has their favorite. Like I've said from the beginning, they're like, Tex, what side do you favor? Mercenaries. I favor money. Because mercenaries and BattleTech until 3067, and I'm not one of those adherents who says, you know, if you play after that, it's not for me. It's not for me, but that doesn't mean you can't enjoy what you enjoy, because what I love about BattleTech is 3025 and earlier, you can play all you want. You can play primitive all you want. You can play whatever slice of the game you like. Whatever slice. You know.
For me, anything after 3039 is heresy. And anything before 30, like the year 3000 is garbage. So I'm telling you, right now, just kidding.
But you see what I mean. Like you can set whatever slice you want and play. And because of battle value, even if you're like, I only play 3025 and someone else plays Clan Invasion, because of battle value, you can just bring more dudes and win that. And it's really cool. The issue I find is that when everyone has their favorites, like this is something that Games Workshop actually did really well, is they give all the armies at varying levels of success new stuff to play with.
Yeah.
And so that is something that players want. People who play the ComGuards do not want to buy a new army. They want to play the ComGuards.
Even if they do buy a new army, that doesn't mean that they're not ComGuard fans first.
Exactly.
And what you're doing is you're disincentivizing those people from carrying forward.
Exactly.
So like, I'm an advocate, and like, I know there's a few other people on YouTube who feel similar to me. I think he's publicly stated it. Like, Frog wants more people going forward, too. Like, he thinks it's the future. I agree with him. So I think that...
No, Frog's great people. I sent both of you fuckers Van Zandt patches. And no, both of you guys are cool people. And oh, you're holding it up. You're like, rip!
Look, I've got my rep! No,
God.
But,
you know, I actually had those made in the U.S.,
How?
That's, no. Believe me. The only reason I mentioned that. The only reason I mentioned that is because I had to literally go find a union shop in the U.S. and it took me months. And I had to call, and I spoke with this union shop that was run by this whole Honduran family in the U.S. and they were like, we will do this. And I'm like, fuck yes. And so I no, it's because, you know, there's that whole thing with YouTubers where they're like, I have shirts. And, you know, the shirt's made in China and
or Indonesia or
whatever. Yeah. And it's sweatshop labor. And then the YouTuber says, my shirt is worth $40. And you wash it four times and the fucking print comes off. Right. And I'm going, that's not what I want to do. So in these limited runs of stuff that I've given away, I haven't sold a goddamn thing. Much to my accountant's chagrin, he's like, wait a second, you paid for this and then you didn't sell this? And I was like, no. And he goes, you are terrible at business. He tells me that, and I pay him to say that. It's great. Like, he will send me texts that are all caps, and it will just be like, what have you done? But the thing is that I think that's kind of something to stand on, because, like, how many things in your office right now are precious to you other than your dog?
A couple of my miniatures, and that's about it.
Right. And why are they precious to you?
Because I put time into them.
You put time into them, time and effort. But that's kind of bringing us back to what we're talking about with BattleTech, is that a lot of people think, you know, they see the jihad and they see it, you know, fall down the stairs and they go, why? Why did this happen? I spoke with a guy who used to work for BattleTech, and he said that basically what happened, and this is just hearsay, is I haven't had them on the podcast, but they said that what the story they told me was like, okay, you have like 30 days to move the plot forward X amount of years. You cannot touch any of these licensed characters. Good luck. And under those writing restrictions, that is an impossible task. So that we got anything is impressive. And I'm not trying to shit on these people. I'm trying to say they were given an impossible situation.
Well, like, for instance, the Blakist era is kind of one of the weakest eras in BattleTech's history. But funnily enough, I actually, like, I know that because people love the video games like MechWarrior 4, people are very, people are very forgiving to the FedCom Civil War era.
Oh, yeah.
It is, I'm going to, like, here's the hot take a lot of people will never hear in my videos, but have heard on live streams. The worst era of BattleTech is not the Jihad. The worst era of BattleTech is the FedCom Civil War.
I agree, because it was not finished before they had to jump forward. And it's also hackneyed, I agree, in many ways.
It's just like, you're just like, why does this happen? This happens because we need it to happen. It's like, right. Like, everything after Operation Guerrero is pure nonsense for the rest of that run. Like, Operation Guerrero, I buy into it. It makes sense. The Free Worlds League and Capellan Confederation, slighted by the Federated Commonwealth, create the Chaos March by diving into it. This actually has a good story behind it.
It's really cool. I agree.
And then after that, you can hear the clown show music start playing as everything starts becoming like, well, why did this happen? This happened because this person's loyal to Victor. Why?
Sell us on it. Yeah, exactly.
Sell me on this. It's like, well, because Catherine bad. It's like,
Catherine bad. Yeah, it's like,
how's Catherine managing all? Here's the worst part. So Catherine comes to power by shit-talking the Davians.
Yes.
She's like, the Federated Sun are dogs,
and
I don't want anything to do with them. The Lyran state is powerful. And it ends in a battle of New Avalon after she seized power in the Federated Suns. And you're just like, that doesn't work.
It's not only that. It feels like a movie script.
Not a good movie script.
Oh, no. I'm talking like Michael Bay. You know what I mean? Like, Michael Bay presents BattleTech, where you're like, explosions. And you're like, but why? Explosions. Why? Oh, all right.
People love the mechs from the FedCom Civil War.
No.
And they're decent.
Oh, my God. Like, Fafnir, Hauptmann, fucking sweet.
Run around with an LB-20X and a bunch of missiles just to be a friend of somebody.
Oh, yeah. Reach out and touch faith. Now, here's the thing about the Jihad that I like, because I like to play both sides. What I love about the Jihad, I forget the book. I want to say it was like Jihad Confidential, Jihad Confessions. They had a book that was like, Conspiracies. It was the Conspiracies book.
Yeah.
That book was excellent because it said, what if And it just offered all of these alternate things that could have played out.
Could be true.
Right.
No, but and, not only that, some of them are true.
Right.
And but some of them are not true.
But it's a beautiful fog of war. And yeah. I think that I was like, oh my God, this is so well written in terms of what if? And it seems like an old spy sitting there smoking a cigarette at a bar and be like, let me tell you about this story. And just tells you all this insane shit. And then you leave. And so it's like a bunch of bar stories from that era. That's what it feels like. And I go, how exciting. Like stuff like that, where it's one of the issues I have with Warhammer 40K is they do a lot of tell, don't show instead of show, don't tell. And so
tell, don't show drives me crazy.
Well, right. I don't want to know exactly everything in this universe. And it's where I think Warhammer 40K kind of soured on me, was when they decided to go back and fill in every gap, every detail, every nuance, and over-describe it. And I go, the best part about Warhammer 40K is to say it is the grim darkness of the, you know, 40th millennium, and no one has any fucking idea what's true or what's not. We don't know what is folklore. We don't know if space marines are real. This is the fable and mythos we have, and it's very grim and dark, and these are the reasons we're given for these things happening. And you don't know what's real and what's not. It's very medieval. It's a dark world. But when you sit there and go ahead.
I also think you can't swerve the audience. So what ended up happening, like with what you're explaining, like we'll say the Horus Heresy, it soured on me because they started changing things that were well established beforehand.
No, for no good reason. You're absolutely
just,
right. And here's the thing: the other thing that swerved me on the Horus Heresy is that like writer quality. So you have like Dan Abnett. Dan Abnett is a fucking amazing writer. He is an amazing, amazing writer. He cut his teeth early on. He's written screenplays. The motherfucker knows how to write. And then you have other writers that are really good, like Graham McNeil and so on. Excellent, excellent writers. And then you have people who shit stuff out that are obviously not people who even know the lore of the setting.
Oh, boy.
And then it just kind of comes in and it's dropped in. And because this person has a reasonable price point for hiring, they will just get them to do 10 books. And so you'll sit there and read the Horus Heresy. Starts off really well, and it has some great foreshadowing, fantastic foreshadowing. You're like, wow, this is really good. And then you find the story just slowly devolves. It's like that meme of the horse drawing where you see the excellent hindquarter, and then the middle is a little bit less done, and then the front is like a five-year-old drawing it. Ooh. And so, and then it gets really good again and gets really bad. And so the issue is when you have quality differences on a timeline, consistency becomes hand wavium. And that's kind of an issue in any lore.
It's also the ego. So like a lot of film writers, a lot of book writers who are working in franchise want to have their stamp on something.
Oh, of course. And say, and so, oh yeah, I wrote, you know, 10 books of the Horus Heresy and I wrote, you know.
But also, like, to say, oh, I did this unique thing. And I know that some people will deny that it's an ego trip. I think it is.
Oh, it's so, like, we're both artists. As much as we hate the term, we're both artists, right? So the issue is, we both have some ego. Now, as you know, I've thrown my ego and myself on swords and off cliffs and everything else, and I try to walk away from every compliment I've ever been paid. When George Ledoux called me the voice of BattleTech, there's like minutes that were removed of me saying no, like literally vehemently no, at like just thank God.
It was
for my
more
editor.
Pleading for mercy. You're like, no, God, no, well, no, it's, please.
It's
no,
one, but please. It's one of those things where we do have, if not ego, some pride in what we do. And I find that kind of the modern era of artist is, let me say this. There's a lady I knew at one point, though we have grown distant, and it, you know, that just happens. Nothing bad happens.
Yeah, that's life. That's
just
life.
No, that's life. You know, you meet somebody and so on and so forth. And this person was a was an actress, you know, stage and what have you. And they had this constant development and constant need to show how many things they'd been involved in, even if they had just shown up on the set once to consult with a character or underread something.
Yeah.
And I saw that and I said, God, let that never be me. Because it's one of those things where I rather like making the stuff than being seen to participate in things. And some people have that dichotomy. They don't understand that you can be the guy who makes an amazing, amazing Philly cheesesteak, or you can be the influencer who takes pictures of Philly cheesesteaks.
Oh boy.
Right? And so a lot of people who are artists get into that idea and they think the hustle mentality means I need to show myself being a participant in all of these bullshitty things all the time. And I go, or you could just make stuff.
Well, I agree with that.
Thank you. I'm not crazy.
No, you're not crazy. You're pretty on the money. But for me, the big junction where things start to fall apart, and this is actually kind of the beginning of what got me out of 40K, because it was the lore and some of just the decision. It's not the price point or the game. Like the I'd already stopped playing the game for a while. I was just painting miniatures. But like, it was actually the point where they, so in third edition, they expanded on what happened to Fulgrim. And they said Fulgrim was trapped within the Lair Blade by the greater demon inside of it. It took over his body, and then what you see as Fulgrim is not Fulgrim anymore. The real Fulgrim is a tormented soul trapped in a sword who is actually been he's been screwed over, and this demon has destroyed his legion, used his body, warped it into this unnatural form, and it's like this ultimate body horror nightmare. And someone, I don't know who it is, decided to go, that's dumb. And you're like, what do you mean? It's like this is actually like a deep story. They're like, no. And so Fulgrim just beats the demon, gets out of the sword, and he just becomes a generic Slaanesh character.
Well, right. And it's shitting on something that is unique and cool and making it cheap.
It's just like, oh yeah, he's just super cool. It's like, well, thanks. Like, thanks for ruining probably one of the deepest actual stories in the setting.
Well, you know, the reason I got out of 40K, and I've said this before, because for the first year of the podcast, I ended every podcast with Fuck Games Workshop. Now,
That's not very nice.
It is. It is very nice. And the reason I say that is, one, I've spoken with enough former Games Workshop employees who say they were worked off the clock. They were told to work off the clock, uncompensated, or risk their jobs. The company makes something like 180% profit on models. What? And it does not pay people well. It treats people like garbage. They've also used lawsuits and a lot of threats to keep their community in line. I disagree with all of that. A community is what makes a game happen. A community is what makes a product successful. You have to love it. If I did not... Now, I know you're a Patreon. I know you're a Patreon. If I did not go out there...
I don't know what you mean.
Shut
the
fuck up. So if I did not go out there every week and answer every question that anyone had and explain where we are in a project, I would not feel entitled to people's money. The problem is that when someone feels insulated from that and says, these motherfuckers will eat dog food, fuck them. When people have that sort of mindset, which a lot of companies do.
Dog food can be both delicious and nutritious.
Believe me, I've lived in my car. Don't make me tell that story. So the point I'm making is the reason I got out of 40K was I had built from 2004 chapter approved a whole tank guard army, you know, like an armor.
Oh, you went leaf blower.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
You monster.
Oh, yes. I used to play tournaments. I was pretty good at them. And the reason I went leaf blower is everyone else had equal cheese. So it was just like, fucking bring it. I mean, you think leaf blower lists back in the day were monstrous. The fight a Tau gun line and tell me that's cheating. Fuck you. So, fuck you. So what
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what
for
you
the
mean.
Greater good, my ass. So here's the thing is I got Price out of the game and I realized I would have to, for the third time in 3 years, buy a new army. And I was like, but why? And so I said, well, maybe I can just enjoy the lore vicariously and all that and start reading the Horus Heresy novels and whatever that. And then those soured on me. And I was like, God damn. And then I started to run into this phenomenon where it was every third person you meet was just like, wouldn't it be cool if there was 40K in this? And you're like, no. And I realized I was done with it largely when I was talking with somebody and they said, you know, Dune ripped off 40K.
Oh, no.
And I was like,
to strangle him.
I almost did. I explained the work of Frank Herbert in context for like an hour and then said, and here's the following things Warhammer 40K filed the serial numbers off of and then copy-pasted. And I went through the work of Moorcock, the work of Frank Herbert, and I just went, it's just an amalgam of all the neat 1980s stuff, which is why people like it.
Yeah, you've got Giger in there. You've got Cameron
absolutely.
In there, too.
Like, you know, absolutely.
Just, yeah.
But if 40K didn't have the art it did, no one would play it.
Well, yeah, but this is something that's the same for any tabletop.
I agree.
The first thing for any tabletop game or any game is the art.
I agree.
Art comes first. After art comes gameplay. After gameplay comes story. Yes, you can have a bad story and have a game that lasts a while, but it won't have legs. The things that have legs have to be engaging. They have to be good. They have to have good stories, good artwork, and
well, look at how good gameplay. Look at how D&D lasted. Like, when you look at early D&D...
You're speaking in the past tense. What do you mean lasted? I don't know what you're talking about.
There is a new era of D&D that I think is going to be in trouble. And the reason
what?
Well, when you send Pinkertons to someone's house over magic cards... That's a bad sign.
There's not a lot of... I'm not a troll. I don't know what people mean whenever I...
Oh, fuck off.
I sincerely
I would punch you. I would punch you a lot if you were in person. And now, not in a hateful way, in a brotherly way, but you would be punched. Not in the face.
In the hospital later. Like, oh! he just laid into me, officer. I don't know what happened.
I know Krav Maga, but it's a racial trait. But no, it's one of those things of I separate the art from the artist. You can hate Picasso but love their art. You can hate Van Gogh and love their art. You can hate Games Workshop and love their art. And a lot of people can't separate this stuff. They go, oh my God, it's all or nothing. And I'm like, bullshit. Life isn't like that.
I mean, even myself, I don't actually hate GW. I know that's a hot take sometimes. Like,
go ahead. I understand.
It's just a company. It's just a company. So, like, you know, it's sort of like, you know, it's like hating a shark for a shark biting.
The pit bull tore those toddlers apart, and it's really just, you know, it happens.
I mean, that doesn't mean that there aren't repercussions. That doesn't mean you have to give them your business.
Of course. Right? I agree with you. I think that is the holistic vote of our era. The holistic vote at your share of stock is your wallet. And you can be like, you know what? I'm not going to give you fucking money. Good luck. And then you can take your money elsewhere.
100%. Like, if you don't respect your audience, you won't last.
Well, that was actually the wisdom of Mel Brooks, where he said, never show contempt for your audience. Never. Like, I was reading...
What if you show nothing but contempt for the audience?
Then your Games Workshop. Come on.
This is a very productive podcast. We're getting a lot of places.
This is average. But I mean, all right. When it comes down to BattleTech, everyone knows my favorite two mechs, the Awesome and the Hunchback. And what's your favorite of all?
Wolverine. Wolverine's the top.
Excellent choice. Excellent. Yeah. That's a fighting machine, that.
And I know why. I used to play Mega Mech in the 2000s when the game was dead, and I played on the InnerSphere server that they had for Mega Mech at the time. There's like hundreds of people playing. It was awesome, and I played for the Free Worlds League. And I'm a Mega Mech commander. Well, don't worry, everyone. We are going to be play Free Worlds League.
The greatest threat to America is America. Glory to America.
Glory to America. You know what? I didn't. Here's the funny part. I didn't even realize that, like, one person pointed out to me in like years later, because I just brain farted it the whole way through, that they were like, you know, your last name is almost identical to the Merrick's last name. You're literally from the same region as them. I'm like, oh my God, that's true.
Accordion music like slowly starts fading in and you just look very distant. You're just like... Glory to Merrick.
Eastern Europe Civil War? But what's fantastic is I played through and I got to discover the power of the Wolverine 6M, which is I have never had more success with a mech over like literally 1,000 games. Anytime I had one in my inventory, I was a happy boy, and I had the single greatest game of my life where I lost most of my lance arrogantly in like the opening stages of a battle, and I had been mismatched against a heavy lance. So he had like a Marauder, a Crusader, an Orion, and an Awesome, and most of them were in pretty good shape. And my Warhammer and then my Wolverine 6M knocked out the entire lance. And like, just only one of those shots was just pure luck. Everything else was just, they couldn't, like, once you're in the pit with the Wolverine, once he's got his jaws into you, you're doomed.
No, like, it's for the same reason. I like one of the things, it's why I did the Charger episode. I had so many people tell me the Charger was shit. Sarno wrote that bad mech article on the Charger. And I was like, have you ever played tabletop? Because I'm saying, when you're the Ayatollah, people are like, oh, it only has 5 small lasers. And I'm like, you have an 80-ton assault mech. They can run in and just drop kick people, WWF style. And I understand some of the critics. They said, you know, post-3052, especially with clan stuff, you have that long-range shooting, and you're going to get pinned down and killed
It's adorable. He's coming towards us. Get the Gauss rifles out.
Right. I say, Nigel, it appears these locals have some uppityness. Loads Martini Henry. Well, no, I had a friend of mine. Hold on a second. Cheers. My editor is here. Cheers. Cheers. But no, I mean, that's how it feels. It's that whole meme of the pith helmet, you know, like Rorik's Drift, where you're just sitting there and feeling very superior because you have Gauss rifles. My favorite thing about the Charger is you can go up and punch them in their stupid, smug faces. I had
see the monocle
will leave the face. My favorite moment, one of my favorite moments in Battletech, was I played against a Davion player who had nothing but long range autocannon, C3I, all that other stuff. And I brought nothing but Chargers.
No, you're such a bastard.
Right. And he goes, saw the small lasers, there's no range of fire. Are you just hoping that action economy? And then like round one, they are all in his face. And he's like, oh no. And I'm like, oh yeah.
You know what you hear instead when round one starts? He's like, why do I hear this? You're round one, fight.
Exactly. So it was like, round one was him whiffing shots. Round two was Rock'em Sock'em Robots. And I mean, I beat the shit out of him. I was using parts of motherfuckers to beat other motherfuckers to death. I'm like, oh, cool, a leg on the ground? Let's pick that up. And he was like,
things just got interesting.
Yeah, he goes, he's like, you're a fucking monster. And I'm like, yeah, you're stuck in here with me, brother. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, like, that's the thing I love about Battletech is you can take something that on paper shouldn't be very good, and if you use it in its little niche, it's so good.
So I don't like the Charger.
Oh,
but
please.
The reason why I don't like it is because I'm a medium mech commander.
And no, so and I agree. It is a waste of tonnage for what it does. It absolutely.
But not only that, it's the guy you went up against was arrogant in the extreme because he built a list.
Oh yeah, he built a list that was to headshot people at maximum range, and like that's why I draw the comparison of the fucking British at Rorik's Drift.
Yeah,
because
I do say
Nigel, because for every Rorik's Drift there is an Isla Wanda, and these motherfuckers do not understand the Zulu War. They're sitting there going, oh, they have us spears and shields. What can they do? Uh-oh, Martini Henry no work good if overheated. Get murdered. And so you sit there and you use... You know what's really interesting about that battle is Shaka Zulu was a fucking brilliant strategist. He used a solar eclipse for backing.
Ooh, I actually didn't know that.
Right. So here's something that's really interesting when you shoot a black powder gun in low light conditions. You can see nothing.
Oh, no.
And so all of a sudden, the range advantage goes away, and they're panic firing as fast as they can.
I hope you like melee.
Right.
I hope you enjoy.
Melee versus the Zulu? No, thank you. And so when it comes down... The Zulu have a spear. They have this short spear.
The Inkwa.
You know what it's named after?
The sound it makes.
When you pull it out of someone.
Yeah.
So I had a friend of mine who was Zulu by heritage, and he made them. And so I was like, oh man, I want to try one of these little spears. I bought two of them. They were so fucking cool. I was like, if someone breaks into my house, I'm going to Zulu them. This is neat.
I'm going to get a free sound effect.
No, it's what I'm saying though, is you look at weapons and their place in time and you go, oh, a short spear versus a fucking Martini Henry. And then I've rebuilt a number of Martini Henrys and I've handled an Inkwa. And I go, I'd rather have the Inkwa. This thing is actually really useful.
Well, so firearms at that age had the advantage of causing terror because of the noise they made and also just the velocity of the kills they caused and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're not performing kills, if you're not actually functionally able to use the terror they cause along with the advantages of, like, actually harming your opponents, you have a problem.
No, and I agree. Because, like, what if you run into someone like the Zulu who's like, okay, kill him. I don't care. And you're like, but you're supposed to. Uh-uh. Uh-oh. I have a doctrine based around fear, and these guys are fearless.
Oh, whoops. Well, there was a mistakes for me.
Well, the other thing that people overlook with the Martini Henry is that era of them used rolled foil cartridges, which is where you take rolled foil of bronze or brass. And the issue is that when the gun has fired 5 or 6 times in a minute really quickly for a Martini Henry, that foil sticks in the chamber. And you have to fish it out with, you know, your fingers or a knife. And you have a club. And club versus Inkwa does not work.
What?
Yeah.
Whatever do you mean? But, you know, like, the thing about the charger is when you're up against a force that is, you know, basically trying to recreate a failed battle against the Zulus, you know, you're going to have a lot of success. But when you're up against a medium mech force that is relying on mobility and has a firepower advantage, your armor advantage and your melee advantage starts to evaporate because you're just not able to do what they're meant to do. Where it's like, I'm going to get in close. I'm like, well, I move 96 kilometers per hour.
Oh, so, no, I agree. If you take a charger and they have medium or lighter mechs, you're dead.
Yeah.
Because he'll just leave and shoot you. They'll Genghis Khan your ass. They will just literally Genghis Khan your ass. They will just ride away and just start, you know, shooting. And you're like, that's not fair. That's cheating.
It's like, you take a while to die, friend, but you will die.
Well, one of my favorite people I ever played against, he had a whole company. I got it. More like a brigade of Ravens. It was just Ravens. So everything was C3I, everything was recon. He had a lot of heavy punch in there, and then they all moved really quick. So it was like fighting a whole flock of birds. It was horrible.
Which was perfect.
It was
really,
no, it was
perfect.
Horrifying. He was one of the greatest Capellan players I ever matched. I was like, fuck you and fuck the horse you rode in on. He was really good.
Look, the Celestial Wisdom has brought many gifts to its commanders.
Oh, yes.
And those commanders use those gifts wisely in the name of the Celestial Wisdom.
One of the things I like to point out is, like, I bash Cappies a lot. People don't understand the difference between a character I play and myself. I'm a fairly open-minded guy. I've ascribed to all sorts of interesting philosophies and ideas, and I've talked about that on the podcast. But, like, there's a lot of people, like, in the gun world, to draw a comparison. There's a lot of people who are AR-15 devotees, and everything must be AR-15 M16 based. And there's people who are AK-47 devotees, and everything must be, you know, Slav jank. I own both. And I'm one of those guys that loves the right tool for the right job. So when it comes down to, like, Capellan stuff, my character hates Capellans because my character is a mercenary. For good reasons. He hates the poor, backward, like, crazy state that's the Hermit Kingdom of North Korea. But when it comes down to, like, if I'm choosing mechs for tabletop, Vindicator. If a Vindicator is one of the best mechs in existence, and people overlook it because it's not excellent at everything, but it's really good at most stuff.
In the context of 3025, it's a very good mech.
It's competitive. It's very competitive.
It starts having problems like a lot of Inner Sphere mechs after 3050, but there are some later revisions of it that you start seeing in the 3060s and forward where it starts being useful again.
I saw a fucked up Vindicator that was brilliant. MRM-40. MRM-40 and mask. Like, run up to range, leave.
Shotgun.
Yeah, and I was like, brilliant. Like, that is an excellent idea. But no, I say that the Vindicator is like the T-55 of Battletech. You know, a lot of people said, like, you know, this was the AK-47 of Battletech. And I'm like, yeah, but the T-55 is the Vindicator. It's one of those things that lives on forever because you can endlessly remix the base idea and get a lot out of it.
Oh, yeah. In the entirety of the setting, there's actually only two factions I dislike.
Oh.
Like, I don't actually dislike every other faction, whether they're good guys, bad guys, what, I don't care. I don't care what the moral character of, my favorite faction is the Civil War faction. You know, like,
sure.
My favorite faction is the one where it's just like, you know, we might not beat the Steiners this week, but we will beat the other province. And Durian, we are coming.
I remember. You know, like, I remember. One of the things you said that fucking killed me was I described the Free Worlds League as Voltron. And you said, yes, but when it comes together, it starts punching the face. That was too good. That was too good.
But, like, I actually like, I like every faction, except for two. There's only two factions in the entire game.
Lay it out there.
I mean, I don't really want to say it. I mean, like, it's okay.
The BPL podcast is one of those things where a lot of people have just come out and said what they feel, what they believe, and what they like or don't. I won't judge you. Now, the internet will.
Oh, yeah, they already do. So I actually made a video on it where, my favorite one is people complain that I talk about them after the fact. It's because people ask me questions.
Like I said, on your podcast, anyone wants to watch a live stream, go to Big Red 40 Tech and literally say, Tech sent me, I have a question. And you will sit there and very patiently explain to them the nuts and bolts of, you know, why the C-bill would probably not be used to buy corn dogs. Like, you will sit there and very patiently be like, well, it's an exchange currency and house bills are probably more used for day to day.
We use memes and shit posting a lot on there too. Of course. You know, I do my best to answer questions that are sincere questions.
Of course, right? Of course.
But no, I made a whole video on it, which is actually the most downvoted video on the channel, which is called... the Clan Wolf disclaimer.
I know you hate Clan Wolf.
No, but I don't hate them because they are clanners. I don't hate them.
Hate them because of plot armor.
I hate them because of their stories.
Yes.
You know, their stories are awful. And it has, again, it's nothing to do with their moral characters. Like, my favorite character from Dark Age, Toranaga Matsuhari. The greatest monster you'll ever find, but a brilliant character. He is fantastic. I love that character. He wipes out House Karita.
Well, right. And it's
no, but
everyone loves a Tarantino murder fest.
Yeah, yeah, like, but he does it in a realistic way where he becomes a warlord. So he rises through the ranks and he comes from nowhere. He's adopted because his parent, like, you know, he was basically a street urchin and this ex Tenchai or whatever it's called, adopts him. And when he adopts him, he takes him in as one of his own. He raises him as his son, you know, obviously. But he does it because it's his gift to the state. He's like, you know, he had no children of his own. So he's like, I'm going to raise you, you know, from being someone who's a drain on society to someone who's going to be a productive element of the Draconis Combine. And you will be a great warrior. And so he goes through like the academy. He comes out on the other side. He actually acquits himself well. He's actually afraid of Clan Snowraven and Ghostbear, though. So he's a brilliant commander, but even then he doesn't understand how to beat them. He doesn't go out of his way to confront them at any point, which is interesting because he actually had real hang-ups about certain things. So he's not just, I win all the time. You're like, neat how that sucks. Anyway, so what ends up happening is he eventually rises to the rank of general and then he rises to the rank of warlord. And once he becomes warlord, he is a loyal servant to the coordinator until he sees how decadent and weak the coordinator has become. Because the Draconis Combine in the early Dark Age is very much cowed by its neighbors. So it doesn't want to cause any trouble. It doesn't want, like, it doesn't step out of line. Why? Because Ghost Bear's over there, the Republic's over there, and the Federated Suns are over there, and they're all allied with each other, and they basically always are looking at the Combine like, you better follow your treaty obligations, or we're going to beat the shit out of you. You better do this, because you remember what happened last time you fought Ghost Bear. Like, you know, it's like this, like, they've literally been blackmailed into a corner, like, you know, just by circumstance, and they're... But there's a lot of resentment in the Combine over this because, you know, it's the Combine. You know, it's like, remember how that worked out for the Star League when everyone kind of banded together and is just like, Karita, Karita, you better do your job. But the difference in this case is that Coordinator went along with it. He looked weak. His line looked weak. And Toranaga grew to resent him. Because he's just like, who are you? Like, you know, what type of leader?
I agree with you. I think that's a good development of character.
And so he kills the entirety of House Karita except for a bastard line from Theodore. And he puts Sakamoto Yori in charge, and she takes on the name Karita, and she's his puppet. And when he takes charge, he invades the Federated Suns because the Republic is busy having a civil war. The Ghost Bears, like the HPG network's down. He marshals his forces. He attacks the Fed Suns, and the Fed Suns are like, what is happening? Like, what are you doing? And so he makes great progress. He actually hires the Wolfstragoons. So he's just like, no, you know what, guys? All is forgiven. Water under the bridge. You guys have had your things. We've had our things. Let's kill some Fed Suns together. Fed Rat Souffle. We can all have it. And so they go through. They take Robinson. The Federated Suns was then led by a crazy person who had murdered the previous leader while this was all happening. He murdered Harrison Davian. And you had Caleb, who's just out of his mind. Like, you know, this is what happens when... And Caleb goes on this military adventurism where he's going to counterattack the Draconis Combine, and he's going to use their allies, Clan Snowraven. Clan Snowraven is not known for their loyalty. Just FYI, they're known for... And he accidentally slighted them a whole bunch. So Caleb marshals all of his forces on a planet, or 50% of the AFFS on Palmyra, waiting for a warship escort from the Snow Ravens. They're like, yeah, we'll be there in 5 minutes. And then they just never came. But you know what they did do? They did tell the Draconis Combine that Palmyra had 50% of the AFFS on it. They're like, yeah, there's a big counterattack coming. Do you guys know of a planet called Palmyra? Just FYI, they have no warship cover. Isn't that weird? Someone promised them that they would. But just if you needed to know that 50% of your enemies are in one location right now, Warlord Toranaga, just
what if FYI? Something happened? Just what if, you know, what if something happened? Just not saying it would, but, you know. You know, just what if?
What if something happened?
What if?
And,
right.
And so they got massacred. They got bombed from orbit. The Combine came in. They fought them on the ground. They killed Caleb. And then Toranaga takes New Avalon. House Karita is the only house in the history of Battletech to take the capital of another successor state, which is...
That's what I find is fucking hilarious in Battletech, is you have these successor states, so you have Succession War One, where it's just like, motherfucker, gloves off, fuck the Ares Conventions.
And it doesn't work. Dies. And it doesn't work.
Everyone dies. Everyone dies tonight. And then you have, like, Succession War Two. We're going to use the last of our warships. Battle of Hesperus 2, by the way, for those of you who are interested. Battle of Hesperus 2, last of the warships in the Inner Sphere, aside from the Comstar Mothball fleet. And the Taurians, I believe, have one in the Magellanic Cloud or something like that. And yeah, most of the warships are gone. So... Power projection leaves.
I love that Comstar's in the background at the beginning of the second succession. We're like, no, please don't.
Please
do
don't.
It.
That's no, insane.
You're crazy. Do it. You should do it. You should totally do it.
Right. Succession War 3 is two toddlers fighting with pool noodles. You're right. And then Succession War 4 is like really bored DM trying to kill its players who are way too smart. That's the way I see it. Is it's like, okay, there's the beholder and I put it there and it's like I cast ice flowers and it's like, You win. So it goes from like actual total war to nonsense.
I think that one of the most fascinating things is, unfortunately, like, you know, I think the clan invasion is rightly the biggest thing to ever happen in Battletech. There's a reason why.
No, I agree. And I loved it. All right. So back in the day when I was a young lad, when I was a young man.
Back in the my day.
Don't make me do grandpa tax. I fought the Moon Kaiser. Soviet Moon Union has to die.
You know what? The first thing I understood when I saw him was, I'm like, you're a communist.
I know two things. One of them is Yankee Doodle, and the other one isn't. So... The one thing, I remember MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries was a near flawless game for me. I was like, what an incredible game, because it covered so much. And then MechWarrior 2, where you have a really beautiful depiction of the clan invasion, like even in limited scope, I remembered seeing that and then going to my local game store and talking with all the other graybeards. And they were like, this is so cool. And I'm like, fuck yeah, it is. You got these guys who are from like beyond the known world.
Oh my God. Coming.
Yeah. It's imagine a medieval world, medieval Europe. And then someone comes from the new world with fucking machine guns. And it that's the way it felt. And it was just incredible to be a part of. And so, yeah, the clan invasion is huge.
But... There would have been such interesting places to go after the War of 3039 that were not the clan invasion. I'm just talking about sphere.
Let's hear this.
So what people have to realize is that the Captain Accord was not as defunct of an alliance as people portray, because there was a lot of economic activity between the Captain Accord. You know, House Liao was only alive because of the graces of Comstar, the Free Worlds League, and the Draconis Combine, basically feeding it equipment. But they were also feeding each other equipment.
Well, yeah, that's where the Charger comes from, and many other things.
But what's interesting about that, and I really mean this, is that if there had been a fifth succession war instead, and there's no clan invasion, it's not going to happen. Let's just say it doesn't happen. There's no such thing.
Yeah, just say the clanners stay wherever the fuck they're doing.
You know, and you have a fifth succession war. I argue the Federated Commonwealth would have lost. And they would have lost decisively. And the reason why is because the Free Worlds League had been reoriented by Comstar. It's a captured state. Like, the Free Worlds League was no longer running operations. It was run by Comstar for Comstar. That's why Thomas Hallis was the Captain General. That's why, they basically, oh, look at all these technological and industrial advances you're getting. It's so weird. They come out of nowhere. Hey, guys. Hey, isn't that weird? Oh, you've become the industrial base for Comstar? That's so strange. Anyway, so, but, you know, they've basically got industries that have been revitalized. They have quiet support from Comstar that is real support. They have, which is basically devolves into intelligence support. The Draconis Combine had become a lion. It had a major military, more powerful than either the Federated Suns or the Lyran Commonwealth on their own. And then you had the Comguards. The Comguards weren't originally built in their form to fight the clans. There wasn't like 50 regiments of Comstar mechs to fight clanners. They didn't know that existed when they were building those mechs and taking them out of, you know, Mothball. That took a long time. That's not something you build up slowly.
And believe me, I've had the what's really weird and slash awkward is when I work for a think tank in the MIC. Oh, fucking Big Red has picked up his dog and is rubbing its belly. So introduce our third podcast host.
This is Aries. He shows up a lot of the time. He's mad right now, though.
Why? Why is he upset?
Well, because I picked him up. Ah! It's okay, bud.
It's what's really weird slash awkward slash, I don't know. You're one of the people who has tried to remind me that I'm beloved and well thought of, and I'm the last person to ever presume that. And so, believe it or not, the people in the think tank all watch Tech Talks Battletech. And they love how I, you know, put real world lessons in there from that job. And so One of the things that I find that's really interesting is BattleTech has always kind of obeyed that. They have really obeyed the MIC madness. And I thought that that was always brilliant. There's always, hey, sometimes companies are dumb and they just invent a product that has nothing to do with modern needs whatsoever.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's shocking to me. I didn't think that that was even possible.
Well, it's what's really
the look
funny,
on your face when I said that. Well, you're like, you
son of a bitch. So look, when it comes down to it, there is, how should I phrase this?
We added VR to our new fighter headset. Isn't that going to confuse the pilot? We added VR, though.
Well, he can see how much money he has in his Fidelity account. Based on Raytheon stock, based on the bombs he's dropping.
The helmet is now worth five times as much as it was before, guys. It's just the way it is.
We built a screw out of tungsten. But why? Shut up. So there is a beat that I've gotten so many emails about. In the Warhammer episode, I do 45 minutes on Beware the Baron. And I did that because I had to explain, like, where did all this money come from that made mechs like this possible? And I showed the changes in government and the changes in war planning based on previous expenditures in military equipment. And people didn't get that. But there is a one frame that people freeze. And they're like, what was that? And it's the LCS program. I literally show frozen for 1 second the LCS at the Beware the Baron. And people are like, I saw that. I had a guy who worked on that program email me. And he just said, thank you.
I think that the Federated Commonwealth would lose because it would be fighting not like the Capellans don't really matter. I know every Capellan player who listens to you, all five of them are now just shrieking in rage. They wouldn't have been the real deciding factor. Functionally speaking, the armed forces of the Federated Commonwealth would be incapable of defeating the Free Worlds League military. The Draconisant Combine Mustel Soldiery and the Comm Guards. You're going to defeat all three of them? You're going to beat all three? You're going to beat a force on your own before factoring in the Capellans, who would also be participating in this, that have logistical superiority, have communication superiority, and have superiority of numbers and quality of equipment.
I don't think you're wrong. It comes down to mobilized strength. Period.
And what's also interesting is my other theory of what would have happened, which would have been so cancerous, is Comstar is all about trying to capture these states for themselves. And so I guarantee you they would have tried to indoctrinate Isis Merrick and they would have tried to have her married to Hohiro, which would have been even funnier.
When you said Isis Merrick, my brain went jihadier. You're like,
don't worry. No, but which would have been even funnier.
And you were pointing up.
Don't worry.
Habibi.
But oh, I'm going to hell. But anyways.
Takbir.
Oh my god. But
come on.
But what is
someone, we're both products of that era.
But what ends up happening?
Come on. The Taliban is on Twitter shitposting. We live in a cyberpunk dystopia.
Welcome to the world.
You know what my favorite part about that is? My favorite part about the Taliban being on Twitter. There was this post about 3-4 months after the American pullout, where this guy was complaining, utterly complaining, about having to work in an office. And his gripes resonated with every person who works in an office. So many people's response to that were like, I get you, Abdul, I understand. Because it was this guy going, you know, when there was a jihad.
When I was a revolutionary fighter.
Yeah. When I was fighting the Americans, I used to be able to have, you know, ride with horses with my friends. And I would, you know, like sleep under the stars and we could pick whatever we wanted. And now we don't get paid unless we sit down in this dingy office for 9 hours a day. And I was like, me too, bud. Me too. I get that.
Victory has never tasted so sweet, am I right, my friends?
No, I felt like I felt bad for the guy. Like, I really did. I was just like, I understand this, man.
I'm just saying that sometimes you get what you want when you don't get what you want when you win.
There was a friend of mine who is missing both of his legs from the Afghan conflict. Oh, he'll make jokes about that all the time. He's a good person. He's missing both of his legs from the Afghan conflict. And he's a good friend of mine. He's not an internet person. Otherwise, I'd have him on the podcast because he's fucking hilarious. But he said when he read those Afghan Twitter posts, as a veteran of like 12 years in the army and someone who was crippled for life because of that war, he responded to that guy and goes, "I'm sorry, man. That's terrible." And I was just like, holy shit. But no, I get what you're saying. It's like, I believe that there's a lot of setup in Battletech for a throwdown that never happens.
So you get the clan invasion instead, which is a great story. I want to stress that it's the better story to have gone with in the long term. It's, you know, it's done more for the franchise. I know some people won't agree with that, but that's like, let's just be real. Like, you know, there's a reason why the clan invasion is the moment the setting blew up. Before that, Battletech had been a pretty successful tabletop war game during the 1980s, but the clan invasion is the takeoff point for the franchise.
No, I agree, because there's so many people that, like, older generation guys like myself and yourself, the Warhammer is the poster child of the setting. But for the next generation forward, the Mad Cat.
Not anymore.
I'm just saying, it has. If I show the Mad Cat, you could say what it was. Yes. Like, you could show that to even mainstream people who don't Battletech, and they'd be like, "Oh, it's a Mad Cat from Battletech." They get it.
But what I mean, though, is amongst the actual core gaming audience, it has changed with time, and it's changed because of the video games.
No, I don't disagree. So I'm glad that, you know, it's God, I forget. And I hate self-referencing. It's one of those things that's kind of notorious. In the Black Pants Legion, whenever we have a meetup, people will try to put my shit on TV, inevitably, even as background noise. No. And I will turn it off. And people think I'm weird, but I cannot stand the sound of my own voice. And so I will turn it off. I'll be like, no, put on anything else, not me. But I remember, I forget which video, because all the shit blends together, and I'm sure you know that feeling, where once you've done like so many videos, you're just like, oh my god, it was this video or that video, I forget.
I'm like that with the books too, where I'm like, that was in that book. No.
Well, that's something I learned in grad school, is you'll be reading 800 to 1,000 pages a week and making notes on it. And so people will say, what was that source for this one little thing? And you'll go,
I have notes for a reason, sir. Here are my references.
Exactly. You just can't recall it anymore. But I remember years and years and years ago calling for more people to join Battletech. And I said, you know, remember to shit on clanners. Remember to hate Capellans. No, I said that because, you know, fuck them. But I said, you know, always be kind, be good to people, and let people know how great the setting is. And I feel absolutely blessed that people like you, like Sven, like Mechanical Frog have come along, because I felt very alone at the beginning, because people are like, fuck Battletech, who cares, it's not 40K, you know, and I'm like, but why? I want more people. I want to be a voice in the choir. My voice hurts to talk. I have nothing but scar tissue in my voice. You don't sound like this if everything went well. And I want more voices, so that way it lives forever.
Well, I mean, I can talk a minute about my pedigree with Battletech. Because
Please do.
The most common accusation I will ever face by anyone is, like, you're just a 40K fan. I've got my first miniature ever in 1994 at the age of 8. Which was an Atlas, which my mom bought for me in Imperial Hobbies. Oh, man.
Those old Atlases were really interesting.
Yeah, dude. Like, you know, I still, you know, I have it somewhere. I know it's not gone, but it's somewhere under the house. I went looking for it. I found my old Kodiak, which is atrociously painted.
Yes. but listen, I'm colorblind. I'm colorblind as shit. And for people who don't know this, little interesting tidbit. When I start talking in Techstock's Battletech, it slowly fades from color to black and white. And that's my editor showing that I'm colorblind. That's my lens. That's my lens fading in. And that's always been like a weird thing. A lot of people don't understand it. But I will tell you this much. I know the atrociousness of young, eager hands.
Yes.
Painting very bad miniatures. I know that. It's just blobby.
Oh, it's terrible.
Even colorblind, I know it's blobby.
You're just like, why is there texture of your paint? But no, so I got started in, you know, 93, 94. I was introduced by my best friend at the time who got me into it. And it would be really, like, I haven't talked to him in, like, 6 or 7 years, which would be hilarious if I'm like, yeah, so I do Battletech. But anyway, so... But what I do is, from that point, I played, I ended up collecting like a regiment of metal mechs over most of my childhood. I played it wherever possible, but game groups started to die off in the late 90s for it. And even before MechWarrior Dark Age came out and like just killed what was left of the market and like there just wasn't really much there, I converted over to Megamech in the early 2000s, like 2004, 2005, you know, just to play. And other than that, I also played 40K at the same time. So during this point, I was like, I play Warhammer 40,000 and I play Battletech. I'm like, you know, Battletech was my preferred game, but less people play Battletech. And
by a lot.
By a huge well, margin.
That's the weird. Sorry. Go ahead.
So what ends up happening is I continue to collect Battletech stuff. I was super abhorred by Dark Age's lore and whatnot when it came out. I was like, I was a Free Worlds League guy even by that point. They literally killed the Free Worlds League and Comstar was gone. Those were like my factions. I'm like, wow, so I guess, fuck me, I guess. You know, it's like, why am I going to be here for this? Well, they came out with a novel called To Ride the Chimera, which was about the resurrection of the Free Worlds League. And I was like, okay, I'll start looking into this. And it's the setting is a bit better than people give it credit for in the early Dark Age. It's still not good. The late Dark Age actually does start getting good. Funnily enough, ironically enough, it's not just because they reintroduced the Free Worlds League. It's because they remove the lens from focusing on the Republic. So the Republic was a faction no one cared about, and I'm not trying to, if you're a fan of the Republic, I'm not trying to attack you. I'm just being for real. Like, you know, the numbers don't lie. Like, no one really cared about the Republic, and when it died, people were combined, like, yay, this is finally over, or they were like, I don't care. No one cared. So... which is sad because I think there's actually, you know, in hindsight, some better Republic material in the source books, not necessarily in the novels. And, you know, so I started following into this. I'm like, that's not bad. It's pretty interesting. And then Dark Age died. I'm like, oh. So before they could add the Free Worlds League to it, it dies. It then gets taken over by for a very brief time for FanPro, which was doing work on the other side. And then Catalyst takes off. I start reading the source books Catalyst releases for it. I followed them pretty regularly from like 2010 forward. The Clan Invasion Kickstarter happened. I sunk an absurd amount of money into it because I wanted plastic miniatures. I got them. I was, you know, overjoyed for, you know, once they arrived and everything. And I was working at my old job at the time while all of this was taking place. So I had these miniatures and no time to do anything with them. And then, I transitioned out of my old role and I started to do some stuff on YouTube. I was covering Warhammer 40,000. And if I had known that people cared about Battletech, like, I would have just done Battletech content from the start. Because, like, I actually went in pretty blind. The first Battletech YouTuber I ever subscribed to was Critical Rocket. And I subscribed to Tex Talks after that. I think I subscribed to you originally, I think in probably 2018 or 19. Somewhere around there. Like, so, but, you know, like,
you saw my expression where I'm just like, I hate when people talk like positively toward me. I'm just like shrinking back in my chair. I don't like it.
To be fair, neither do I. The thing is what ends up happening is I start making Battletech content on the channel. It's, you know, I literally asked my audience in a live stream when I was really discouraged with Warhammer because they brought the squats back. And I was just like, guys, I don't really want to cover this subject anymore. You know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this. I'm going to just go back into the, you know, into working for somebody probably. But you know what? It's near my birthday. I'm going to release some BattleTech, you know, videos because I like BattleTech and I would like to release it. And the BattleTech videos blew up. And I'm just like, well, I guess I'll make more BattleTech videos. And then it just kind of, literally without really much of a plan for several months, I just made BattleTech videos that people really enjoyed. And over time, the quality got better. And, you know, once I got serious about it, I actually stopped watching all other content creators for a year. And the reason why is not because I'm, like, arrogant or anything like that. It's because...
No. I get you. You want to be in your own lane. You want to develop your own process. I take no insult to that. I understand it well.
And
I had a talk with Sven Vanderplank. Another excellent
incredible, channel. Incredible content creator. Incredible.
Great person. And when it comes down to what they do... Sven said, I did not watch any of your videos on all these subjects while I was writing mine. And they apologized for that.
It's no reason to apologize.
No. That speaks volumes to their character. And so I said, brother, you honor me deeply. You can watch any of my videos or not. I'm just glad you're another voice in the choir because they were humble, they were kind, and they were decent. I feel the same way with you, by the way.
Oh, now you're getting me to shrink in my chair. God damn it.
Shut the fuck up. Cheers.
Cheers.
So, by the way, oh, God. That sounded like a Gmod. Like
plastic
error.
On plastic. That's what that is.
Wow. So, by the way, these glasses that I'm drinking out of are courtesy of GM's Corvette division. Which amusingly came from a GM lawyer, and so
after you slandered General Motors, for
no, I didn't. I made a video called "The Blackjack GM's Okayest Product," and after that, I was in touch with the legal division, who thankfully are BattleTech fans. And they're really cool, decent people. And the lawyer I know is an excellent human being. And he said, you know, like, hey, I'd love to send you a token. I love the shit you guys do. You do it for charity. You guys are really awesome. And so he sent us Corvette division glasses. And I've, again, when it talks down to like shrinking in your chair, I appreciate what you do. I really do, brother. And the same way I feel the same for Sven Vanderplank, the same way I feel for, you know, Mechanical Frog. And it's one of those things that I can say I'm very thankful for is we have a fan base and community that is cross-referenced and very reverential and very polite and very kind and very understanding. And they all love each other. And that is a rarity in today's world because you and I are not, you know... We're not out there espousing political viewpoints. We're not out there espousing things to make us, you know,
I mean, I am a neo-feudalist, just to be very clear. So actually, all of my BattleTech videos are from the lens of me advocating. No, just kidding. They're actually all there for me to advocate for the virtues of neo-feudalism.
I actually made a coworker at work laugh because she said, what is your political orientation? And I said, I'm a neo-Victorian. And she goes, what do you mean by that? And I said... You may only shitpost against the government if you do so in the style of Gilbert and Sullivan. And you must always politely escort a lady. And then I bought her lunch.
You know what? You know what would have been better? You just start singing Rule Britannia.
Rule Britannia, Britannia rules the waves. England never shall be slaves. What's sad is I can sing about 90% of Gilbert and Sullivan. And it's one of those things where I'm an odd person. What's the word? Contrast. Isn't that what they like to say? So you made the Warhammer episode, which is fantastic. And
Warhammer 2C.
Sorry, Warhammer 2C for a clan. I appreciated it. I am humbled. You asked me to play a part of it. You were like, there's this old grizzled guy who's very grumpy. Who do I get to voice that? And you approached me, which humbled again.
I also, I got Beef to do Aaron de Chevier, and
he did so well. He is so good at that.
And the funny, there's a few people who didn't like it, but I'm like, listen, you have to understand. I'm just giving you the accurate depiction of Aaron de Chevier.
Yeah. You know, no, you're not wrong. I think you need a Frenchman to make that work. When it comes down to it, you've made an excellent video. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate the opportunity. So what's next for you? What's your next video?
I'm working on a lot of stuff. So there's
give me the inside track.
I'm working on a video about missile carriers. It's going to be a lot simpler. It's going to be about 40, 45 minutes. And it's basically going to go over SRM carriers, LRM carriers, their history in the setting. But also kind of, there's a critique in it, because if you read TRO 3026, TRO 3026 clearly describes the missile carriers as being generic. So much like an autocannon is not an autocannon. It's like an Imperator autocannon class 10, or it is a, you know, Kaliyama, you know, autocannon class 20, right? Missile carriers were not a quick sell product. There was no such thing at that time. It was there to represent just a generic style of vehicle that was like literally like, hey, we picked up a armored lorry and we put a bunch of rockets on the back of it. Let's just go. Because it's like, how else do you represent that? It's a generic rocket launching, missile launching platform. And they've turned it in more recent times, I think since FanPro Forward, into a quick sell product. Where Quixel designed the LRM/SRM carrier and had proprietary rights over it, and all of the SRM LRM carriers are knockoffs of theirs. And I'm just like, it just doesn't work, because no one, like, you know, you have to have a generic unit like that, where it's just like, they found, you know, it's not necessarily super accurate. It's not really a 60-ton vehicle in some cases or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just there to represent, we found a tractor and we put missiles on it. You know, like, that's the purpose of this unit. And so I go over its history in the publication a little bit in terms of how it changed from 3026 in its original description, even in the reprint edition by FanPro, actually, of 3026. And they've shifted it over to the more modern, well, it's actually a quick sell product, and it doesn't just take on many forms. It's actually a specific set design. It's like, yeah, it's got such a generic name and it's such a generic concept. I just don't buy that. So there's that, and then I'm working on the Atlas II, which is a video that I'm doing afterwards, before I actually head out to Chicago, which will be weird. I have all this sort of anxiety because I've not traveled extensively in a while.
I'm
going
to say this. As someone who never shows their face and never shows up to any of these conventions, you are the bravest person I know in this realm, just to show up in person and to be like, hey, I'm Big Red. You know, that's insane.
I don't know if I don't think that you're going to find me going out there like, oh, hi, you know, broadcast here. I don't think that's going to happen necessarily.
I tell you what, I will ship you if you won. Actually, wait, Adepticon?
Yeah, I'm going to Adepticon.
I have people who will be there. Are you willing to meet with them? Because I have an idea.
Are they going to harm me?
No. Well, maybe. So here's the thing. One of them loves Malort, which is poison. Do not accept any shots of Malort.
I don't that drink is alcohol. Poison.
No. Don't worry. They're from Detroit. They will do this, and they'll be like, come on, have some air. What I'm saying is, I could send you some BPL people's details, and they'd be glad to meet with you. Because you're such a righteous person.
Oh, come on now. Like, I'm a fat fool on the internet. I make stuff. I try
aren't
to have fun.
We
I
all?
Like,
aren't
I like
we
to
all?
Shitpost. Well, no, not all of us. Some of us are fatter or less fat. I happen to drag around the gravitational well of this planet. To be quite honest, with me going to Chicago, I'm endangering hundreds of millions of lives because the axis of the Earth is likely to tilt a little bit.
Oh, come on. Chicago is the town of sausage. You can't really add to that. Serious. Is,
you know what's hilarious? You, as you say that, you're like, how did it become negative 20 in one? What's going on here? Like, the only all thing right. that I can really coincide this with is Adepta. Oh, God.
Oh, no. All right. So, at any rate, that'll be the end of this podcast. Do you have anything you wish to express to the general public, the internet as a whole, or upcoming projects? Please do.
So, I'll quickly do one other coming project.
Sure, sure, sure. Please.
I'm also going to be doing, I'm redoing some of my old videos next year.
Oh, I've done this recently, so I know how interesting that is.
Yeah, this was the plan since late last year, and the reason why is because a lot of my old videos just don't hold up to my current standard.
That's the story. Believe me, I get you.
And I'm going to be redoing the Banshee first.
Oh, that's exciting.
The reason why is because the first video that actually starts to change how I approached videos when I built it was the Banshee, because I fundamentally didn't just talk about the Banshee as just a machine like Mr. Train.
Fuck off.
I pointed out that the Banshee had like a character. It has a character to it.
No,
it
you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
And it has a journey. And, you know, that's why I called it the video is called From Zero to Hero. Because it goes from being a reviled, unproductive, you know, useless mech over to one of the most dangerous machines that, to be quite frank, plays a major role in preventing the collapse of the front lines of the Lyran Commonwealth, or the Fedcom, but it's really the Lyran Commonwealth, against the clans. Because the only reliable battle mech the Inner Sphere had at the time that could go toe-to-toe with a clan heavy mech was the Banshee 5S. Anything else, you know, you're too slow, or you are not armored enough. Yeah,
because you're too slow and you're going to get pelted with missiles until you die, because clanner weapons being what they are. No, I agree with you. I think that's an excellent take.
But to the audience, though, and that's going to be a huge video because it's going to double as my House Steiner video, so it's going to be like the Warhammer 2C was, but just for Steiner instead of Star Adder.
But, no, I like it. I like that idea.
But what's the word I'm looking for here? In terms of what do I want to say to the general audience, to anybody who has enjoyed my stuff, to anybody who doesn't enjoy my stuff even, sincerely, thank you so much. The channel has been transformative to my life in terms of how I basically live in the context of like what I know I'm going to do when I wake up in the morning. I feel consistently grateful for people's support. Sometimes I feel like, you know, it's called imposter syndrome or something like that, because like really, I read a lot and then I try to put together coherent arguments. You know, that's fundamentally what I do. Sometimes I fail at that. But in general, I try to stay true to myself. I try to stay true to my creative vision, but it's all for nothing, and not for actually, but I mean, it's all for nothing if the audience doesn't care, or the audience doesn't want it, or the audience doesn't view it in a way that's productive. And, I am nothing without the audience, and
I get you. It's one of those things where as you know, on Patreon, I tell people I feel privileged just to be able to create anything whatsoever. And I keep trying to tell people at the end of every month, as you know, like, hey, it's the end of the month. If you got bills, whatever, you know, take your money elsewhere. I don't care. And people keep paying me money. Your dog sounds very upset.
He's always upset. What are you doing, Aries?
All right, pick him up. Give him some kisses. Boop the snoot. I need to see a boop the snoot. Come on. Come on.
No, he's mad.
Why is he mad?
I don't normally boop a snoop.
But what I'm saying is I understand your viewpoint, and I appreciate your humility.
I mean, I also, like, you know, the channel functionally, you know, like, I basically runs on memberships, but I tell people every time, I'm like, man, take care of yourselves. You always have to take care of yourselves. Don't care. Don't take care of a fat man on the internet. You know, like, you know, this is entertainment for people. You know, for what I do, I'm an entertainer. Like, I inform people, I go over tactical overviews, I go over technical overviews and histories and whatnot. That's entertainment for people. But at the end of the day, you know, you should, like, you know, if you can't afford to go see a movie, don't. Like, you know, like, take care of yourself. Make sure you're, like, I've seen the worst thing I ever saw in my life, and I've seen it multiple times, but it just sticks to me the most, is when I saw somebody forego their rent to buy Magic cards. And
yeah, I saw that with Games Workshop product, and
I've seen it less so with GW stuff and more so with Magic because of the addictive nature. And like, if you play Magic, this is not me throwing shade at people who play Magic. I'm just saying.
No, you're talking about a situation of unique excess. That's it.
Yes. And I remember watching that, and I'd quit playing Magic like 2 years prior, and I just looked at that, and I was just like, if not for the grace of God, you know, that could have been me, right? And the truth of the matter is people need to make sure that they are taking care of themselves and their loved ones and their friends before they necessarily, and it's not just entertainment as in like entertainment on the internet, like, you know, being part of a Patreon or membership program or whatever. It's, you know, like just in general, I would encourage people to really look towards, you know, taking care of what's important in life first. And what's important in life is not necessarily a movie ticket.
Agreed. Thank you. Thank you, Big Red, for being part of the BPL podcast. And see, it wasn't that bad. Now you can go walk your dog.
Oh, no, he's not going anywhere, are you, Aries? No, not today. Okay, now he's mad at me. He's mad at me all the time now, though.
Just say walkies. Just say, no, do you want to go for a...
No, he doesn't like walks. He what? Likes it if I take him to the DOG park. But if I say walk, because he hates the leash.
Really?
Yeah, he gets anxious about it. And if I, like, direct that towards him, he's excited right now because people just came in the house. But, he hates them because if I put him on the leash, he is horrible. When I take him out, like, for a walk, if we come across people, his anxiety goes up, his tail tucks between his legs, and he'll be a nuisance on the leash the whole rest of the walk.
No shit.
If I take him to the dog park, he's just wild and free and running around.
Well, take him there, I insist.
Maybe. We'll see.
Maybe. Okay.
Maybe.
But only if there's chocolate ice cream, right?
Well, for me.
For you, not him. Fuck
not him. No, screw him.
Anyway, Red, thanks.
Have a great night.